Welcome to the Eigencast, a podcast about the business of enterprise technology. How to buy it, how to sell it, and how to use it. I'm your host, Justin Warren. This episode is part two of my discussion with Greg Neeraman from HDS. What started out as a pretty typical product briefing from a vendor turned into a discussion about the market in general and how customers make decisions. You would have heard a teaser of this in the last episode, but here it is again, just in case you've forgotten. If you, as an executive, are basing purchasing decisions based only on what Gartner have in a magic quadrant, please fire yourself before I do.
That's right.
Right. It predefines the market for them because I think it serves their business interests.
And look, maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe it's just like, yeah, buy whatever.
What are the characteristics that are driving business value that you think enterprises should be looking for?
You need electrons to run your business, but you don't have a chief of electricity. All that coming up in just a moment on the Eigencast. This episode of the Eigencast is brought to you by Pivot9 Consulting. You can find them at pivot9.com. If you'd like to become a sponsor of the Eigencast, get in touch with us via email at eigencast@eigenmagic.com. So in this, the second part of my discussion with Greg, we start off talking about the role analysts play and how certain behaviour from analysts actually shapes the marketplace. And then we start getting onto the way IT leaders can influence their business and the kinds of things that they need to take into consideration, not just in how they make decisions, but in also how they demonstrate the value of those decisions and therefore the value of IT. Essentially, you need to demonstrate that IT has strategic value and you need to do so at a high level. Otherwise, it's just operations and you will not get a seat at the strategic table, nor should you. So let's continue the conversation that we started in part one. Here's Greg Neeraman.
So one of the challenges that I think we have at HDS is that when we talk about, if you go search on the internet right now and hear who the leading Flash players are, HDS is typically not included in that conversation. And there's a lot of reasons for that. But on the fundamental sides of it, you know, I walked you through what our flash shipping numbers are to date. Pretty respectable numbers. When we ran those by Gartner, we were told that we would be among the leaders in flash shipping based on those numbers, which made us feel pretty good. But I keep coming back to, well, how do we, I feel like Rodney Dangerfield here. We can't get any respect. So I think part of this is that we do need to show as close as we can provide an apples-to-apples comparison of where our solutions stack up against the guys that are regularly mentioned and discussed in that breath.
That is a really good point, and I will summarize thoughts here for the benefit of people who may be listening to this. Gartner, for all their faults, they have defined a great brand and people pay attention to it, for good or ill. So the fact that they exclude certain people from categories in Magic Quadrants or whatever based on arbitrary criteria, mm-hmm. like those are the rules of the game. If you want to play in that game, you have to play by those rules. So that's one of the reasons I can see that it's a good thing that Hitachi has this all-flash array that will, I think, based on my read of the spec so far, it will meet the criteria of being included in Magic Quadrant all-flash, blah.
That's correct.
So that is one of the marketing things that has to happen, and it's, you know, a reality of running a company. You have to sometimes do things that you don't necessarily agree with because that's the way the world works. So this is a way of getting you into that conversation, into the consideration set, where all of these other companies already are. Once you are there, then you can have the conversation about what are you trying to do, what are you trying to solve, this is what our thing is great at. But if you never get invited to the dance, you can't ever, you know, get out there and show your stuff.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So that's why I think it's important. And I'd like to think it's helpful. At least it gives IT administrators kind of and CTOs a kind of a reference point to look at of how to contrast and compare the solutions we're bringing to market. They may identify an entirely different set of requirements that are important to them that we haven't identified here. And obviously, as we bring this product to market, obviously just announced today, we're going to learn some lessons there. But yeah. I think we've got the basic fundamentals here. We talk about density, performance, price, and the flexible deduplication options. I think that combination of solution sets covers a very broad range of requirements that the enterprise is looking for.
Yeah, it's tricky because these are all features, not benefits, which is one of the things in advertising or something. You sell benefits, not features. But it's
that's right.
And I think from a customer perspective, and just even from an analyst perspective, for myself trying to figure out how all of this stuff fits together, there is so much out there, so many options, particularly in storage. It's just berserk. From a customer perspective, trying to figure out how to compare people is quite challenging. And if it's just on, if it's on these sort of numbers, yeah, it's really easy to say, oh, well, the max power consumption is, X watts and this one is less than X watts, therefore the lower one is better. Okay, but do I really want a low power consumption thing? Is that what this is for? This is supposed to be a performance thing. So it's like, well, hang on, my Ferrari doesn't go as fast, but I get great miles per gallon. I was like, what? If I wanted great miles per gallon, why I would buy a train or something, I think sometimes we can get too bedded down in dealing with the nerd knobs because they're easy to compare and because we don't have anything else to compare. And that's part of my job as an analyst is
well, I was just going to say that. Isn't that what the analysts try to cut through and I think the biggest arguments that a lot of vendors have with the analysts, and you've seen my barbs that I've had with different analysts in the industry, I think the challenge is what the analysts have identified as priorities consistent with the priorities for enterprise customers. And you mentioned about, Gartner is a great example. If you didn't have I think one of the requirements they had is that your all-flash array had to be a single SKU and it couldn't be hybrid, couldn't be mixed with disk. Well, again, I would go back to the point of what are the priorities for the customer. Is that something the customers ask for, or is that a way for the analyst to make it easier to kind of segment this very complicated category of storage?
Yeah, I'm happy to go on record to say that the way Gartner have made the all-flash thing and excluding arrays that, a standard array that you can swap out disk and put flash in it, it's bollocks and it's not useful for customers because if I'm looking for some flash stuff, I will absolutely consider something from NetApp or EMC or something, all I do is swap out the SSDs and I get all the same functionality, but I get flash. Absolutely, I'm going to put that in there. I'm not only going to look at the stuff that Gartner thinks. I know it has to be flash and only flash.
Right. It predefines the market for them because I think it serves their business interests. And I'm not trying to be a tinfoil hat guy here. Very clearly, the more segmentation they can create across the industry, the more value those reports become to them. But it may not be reflective of genuine enterprise customer interest or their thought process as far as what are the priorities for their environment.
Yeah, quite possibly. And look, it's easier to do. So, humans are lazy and it's generally easier to do something when it's a nice, hard, bright line and any segmentation of the market has to be arbitrary. You have to draw a line somewhere. They've picked a line. I happen to disagree with the value of the line, but where else do you put it? I don't have a good answer for that either. So, it's not to be completely anti-Gartner here. It's like, well, that's the way Gartner operates. And it's like, if you understand that, and you use it as a data point, some information, that's useful. If you, as an executive, are basing purchasing decisions based only on what Gartner have in a magic quadrant, please fire yourself before I do.
That's right.
Well, oh my God.
Justin, let me turn this around on you for a second, right? I mean, we talked about, and you made up a very good point, right, about features and, our features and specs, the kind of things, is that creating business value? From your perspective for the flash market, what are the characteristics that are driving business value that you think enterprises should be looking for in flash?
I think it's really tricky. I think what you want to have a look at is the raw capacity. I'm not a fan of this effective capacity thing but it's complicated. Part of the reason is that the software that can dedupe stuff can be used to dedupe on other things, like spinning disk can be, the data can be deduplicated. It's just where you put it. The reason it happens to have dedupe on flash more than spinning disk is to do with the way the performance overheads involved in doing that, and you more or less had to do it anyway because of the way flash works under the covers. It's a very complicated thing to do that, but it's based on certain assumptions. And the challenge here is that the assumptions are what make it an effective comparison. What's useful about this sort of stuff? I think the features are just data points, and I think that you actually really need to understand what you're trying to do, and that involves taking some time and understanding your business better. That is a really crappy way for me to try to sell analyst services, because that makes your job hard and no one wants to do that work. They right. want to just go, what should I buy? I want an easy button. And I guess I haven't, and I don't think anybody at the moment has worked out how to convert a very dynamic, rapidly changing in, you know, seconds, months storage industry. It's completely upended in the last couple of years. It is not an easy job to turn that into easy button. I think figuring out what it is that you want to do is part of any decision around a large spend. So right. I guess I would advise customers, look, if you're going to go and spend $2 million on all flash, like if you have a budget that's rough, I could spend $2-4 million on some stuff. It's like, well, how much of that budget is... are you going to spend on figuring out whether or not you're making a bad decision? And look, maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe you're just like, yeah, buy whatever. If that's the case, who cares what the specs are? Buy whatever you feel like.
Well, no, I challenge you on that. I'll give a real-world example, and I can't drop real-world names, unfortunately. I apologize. But think of a brokerage house that their ability to execute transactions, the faster they're able to execute transactions, directly dictates into the amount of revenue that they can generate within a specific period of time. And so we've worked with some financial institutions that have made that transition to flash and then taken it to the step further of how do they get the optimum performance that they can possibly get out of a VSP system with flash. And the differences, which may seem very incremental and really hair splitting, I think, to, you know, typical analysis, is the difference between hundreds of thousands of dollars per hour. And that's really significant. So we talk about your performance being a criteria, but not the only criteria. It depends on the use case. And when you've got a high transaction environment in a financial institution, we've got hundreds of thousands of dollars that can make the difference between, you know, having a good day or a bad day. This is significant. And that's not going to be every customer. And you could argue that that's an edge case. And I wouldn't argue with you. But there is a case to be made there. And those guys aren't buying, you know, 20 terabytes at a time.
No. Well, let me flip this around on you a bit then. So if I can save $100,000 an hour by putting in flash over something else, it's like, why don't I just make a decision right now to say, buy flash now? Because if I take 3 weeks to figure out which flash and how to optimize and tune and everything else, I've just left a whole bunch of money on the table.
Yeah.
So who cares what I buy? Buy it now. Because the opportunity cost of delay in making a decision is so high. The reason you take a long time to figure out whether you're making a decision is because the opportunity cost of making a wrong decision, or the cost of choosing wrongly, is very high. Honestly, the difference between buying one flash array over another one in that particular use case, you're talking about relative to what it might have been had I chosen a different solution. Mm-hmm. And then you've got to figure out what the break-even point is. Those guys know how to do those risk calculations, which is, what is the optimum amount of time I should spend trying to figure out how to make the optimum decision compared to just saying, whoever walks through my door first wins. And then I save all of that decision-making time because the likelihood of me making a wrong decision is very, very low. And the impact of making a wrong decision and just going, oh, well, I chose wrong, I'll buy a different thing tomorrow, is none. So that's where switching costs become important as well.
It does. But I also think, you know, we talked back before about the value of the services and software and other things that are wrapped around the solution, particularly like support. Yep. You know, what does that look like? You know, if this modular AFA goes down, how fast can I get a replacement? Where's the depot? Do I have in-house resources to provide support for these things? How familiar is my team with these solutions? All of that gets factored in there, which is why you can't just pull the trigger and say, spin the wheel and say, I want that vendor.
Yeah.
It gets a lot more complicated, especially when you're buying petabyte scale type solutions. You would think that would be a very easy decision. You know, they're almost making the money that's going to cost to implement this. Yeah. But there are other residual consequences to this that may negate that value if they haven't done the appropriate research and due diligence ahead of time.
Yeah, and this is blatant self-interest from an analyst consultant. That's the kind of stuff that I do, which is all about understanding. It's nothing to do with the knobs and bells and whistles and straight line performance. It's all around what are the things that are important for running your business. So, and we're saying, risk of making a wrong decision. Or one of those could be this vendor will not fix the thing within the amount of time because they have a poor track record, or the way this would get architected is going to be incompatible with various other systems. So if it's done wrongly, it's offline for a day and a half. And at your rate of loss per hour, that's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Therefore, that particular factor there is important because of your business. Whereas for other businesses, it's like, well, yeah, it can be offline for 2 days. That's not important for us. But other things are more important. So that's really about going, what are the levers that are the most important for you? Those should be the things that are the top criteria for you making your decision. That is almost nothing to do with technology stuff. That's just walking people through how to make a decision. But I have a simple spreadsheet thing that I use for that, really, which is about encouraging people to figure out what's important to them. The most fun with that process, though, is when people run it. Like, I make them do something which is relatively empirical. It's kind of not, but it forces a bit of science in it. And that creates an answer, which will be one of the solutions. And the fun part is when the answer comes out and it's not the one they want. So then we get to go through all of the criteria and reweight everything so that they get the answer they really wanted. But that tends to highlight these are the things that are actually important to you versus what the things you thought were important when you first started this. And that's the value of going through the exercise, not so much what the spreadsheet says the answer should be.
No, that's right. That's right. But you'd be surprised, Justin, how many companies don't go through that formal of a process to understand.
I'm not surprised at all.
That's what keeps you in business.
But it's amazing.
You could do a whole podcast just on the transformation that CTOs and CIOs are going through because, and I'm probably preaching to the choir here, if you're that CIO that isn't thinking about business process and the value that IT is bringing back to the business, you're that dinosaur that's going to find yourself on the outside looking in pretty soon. We're seeing this very dramatically all over the place. Hugh Yoshida, our CTO, talks frequently about a couple of recent environments that he was in where the CIO they literally eliminated the CIO role because they didn't see the value in the strategic decisions they were making, and those responsibilities and decisions are switching over to the business side. So where it becomes less of a technical role and more of a business strategy role as far as how those decisions are being made is happening at a pace that I think would shock a few people. It's a shame that there's not more research or analyst study being done on the role of the CIO because it's evolving very, very quickly.
Yeah, there is a bunch of stuff out there, so maybe I should get someone to commission me to go and do that study. It'd be really interesting. I agree. And there's a case to be made for just saying, look, IT is just it's a part of doing business these days because everyone has a computer. So why is this a special functional role within the organization like finance or HR? I would argue that it's probably as important as HR and finance, but I don't have a really, like, I haven't done the research and got the nice essay backing up why I think that is so versus saying, hey, just make it part of operations. Because in a lot of organizations, like, there might be a CIO, CTO role, but it's a technical function that actually reports to the COO because it's, your job is operational.
Right.
You provide us with tools that help us get the job done. It's not of strategic value, or the strategic decisions are wrapped up in the technical IT part is wrapped up in everything else that we consider when we're making a strategic decision.
And don't you think that's kind of dangerous? Because I think that really kind of diminishes the role that IT can bring to the business and why it's so important to understand the business value that IT is bringing to your business. If look at all the big disruptions taking place in the industry right now, and I, this is going to sound so cliche, I should smack my head on the desk right now. But when we talk about, people talk about Uber of this or the Airbnb of that. If we look at the fundamental, that it's not so much IT as it is business strategy. I mean, but IT is the enabler for that. but there's an overarching strategy that makes those disruptions happen. And IT has a role there. And that's why it's so critically important that IT leaders be able to define the business value that they can help create. They've got to think out of that strictly technical role.
Yeah, I would say it needs to demonstrate that level of impact on the business, because otherwise you will end up being the chief desk officer or, you know, the chief power officer. It's like you need electrons to run your business, but you don't have a chief of electricity because it's just factored into operations. And I'd say, in fact, in many companies, it's interesting when certain vendors and other people are talking about stuff like invisible infrastructure or stuff where it you don't see it. It's magic. It's behind the thing. There is no chief plumbing officer, right? It's just operations.
Right.
If the plumbing's not working, you know, if your toilets break down in head office, that's a big, big deal. But is it really strategic? Well, part of it, you know, where do you have your head office? Where do you put your buildings? There's no dedicated role for that at C-level, but it is factored into the strategic decisions. So if you want to have a C-level role and be involved at C-level, then whatever that portfolio that you're in charge of needs to have the same level of impact and the same scope as HR or finance on the entire operations of the business. And that's the challenge for IT executives, to say either yes, it does, and here's how, or no, it doesn't, and fold it into operations. And if you want to have that impact, go work somewhere else.
Yep, absolutely.
And on that note, thank you for starting off with a briefing that went in a completely different direction.
It did.
It was a really, really good chat.
It's funny, hosting a podcast and being a guest are two very different things.
Yes.
As I'm sure you
know.
Yes,
they are. And thanks again to Greg, not just for giving me the briefing, but also being a really good sport about the recording that we did. Well, that's all for this episode of the Eigencast. I hope you've enjoyed our special two-parter. If you'd like to hear more episodes, go along to the website, which is eigenmagic.com, and you can listen to a bunch of episodes there in the browser itself, or go along to iTunes or your favourite podcasting tool, and you'll be able to find the Eigencast to subscribe to. If you'd like to talk to me about any of the topics we discussed in this or indeed any other episode, you can find me on Twitter at JP Warren. Until next time, I've been Justin Warren. Bye for now.